Let's get started. So for our closing panel session, we're going to be talking about the C++ technical specifications. I'm going to be moderating this for you guys. And we're going to go through and give you guys really brief presentations from people about each of the current draft technical specifications that are going through the committee process. And once we get through the presentations, I want everyone who has questions to just ask questions as long as you can. I'll try and make sure the questions... We'll see if we can get like a couple of mics up here so you can queue up at the microphones and ask your questions. And we'll go from there. Sound good? Awesome. Okay, let's get started. We're going to start off with Marshall talking about library fundamentals TS.
Oh, thank you. Okay, the library fundamental TS is kind of a follow-on to, remember, TR1 in the pre-2011 days. It's a collection of useful and desired improvements to the standard library that don't require any language changes. And they include things like, new slide, thank you. A function template called apply, which calls takes a tuple of arguments and calls a function with it. Allocator support for standard function. A couple of things from Boost, optional and any, that people have been using successfully in Boost for more than a decade. String view, if those of you who were in my talk last night, we went over that a lot. It's a read-only, non-owning view into a collection of characters, really useful for string processing. There's a set of new string searching algorithms, including Boyer-Moore and Boyer-Moore horse pooling, which give you substantially faster than linear time searching on large inputs. There's some new sampling algorithms for the for doing statistical work. Those are all in Library Fundamentals V1, which has been published already. It was published this year. Oh, I forgot about the extensions to shared pointer to support arrays. And we're now working on Library Fundamentals V2. It has things like OStream Joiner, a way of basically outputting a sequence to a stream with a set of separators. Propagate Const, which is a wrapper for basically maintaining const correctness through encapsulation. Algorithms for the greatest common multiple and least common denominator, a source location capture facility to make it easier to log where in your source code things are happening, and then a set of routines for uniform container eraser so that you'd be able to erase things out of pretty much any container in a uniform way, making it easier to write generic code. Many of these things I expect, though I can't guarantee, will show up in C++ 17. We'll have to see what the committee says about that. Various portions of these are available in libc++ and libstdc++ and Visual Studio today. Not all of them are available in any of these implementations, but different subsets are available for you right now.
Awesome. Next, we're going to have Gore talking about the concurrency TS.
So it's wonderful because I was told three slides only, and we have exactly three things in concurrency TS. So one, future gets the then, and then allows you to write this code.
So you ask why do we want to write this code? Well, you see, without future then, you will not be able to write this code. So essentially, without future.then, you cannot use futures with coroutines. So that's number one. Number two, we have three new classes that allow us to coordinate between threads: ledge, barrier, and flex barrier. And this picture describes them all. Essentially, we have a bunch of threads, and they're counting down, and either in a blocking fashion or non-blocking fashion. Eventually, when the count goes to zero, whoever was waiting is released. And first two, ledge and barrier, they're blocking, so they block everybody until the barrier is reached. But flex barrier allows you to specify a callback so that when the count goes to zero, something else is launched.
And number three, we are getting atomic shared pointer and atomic weak pointer. Essentially, it has the same, they have the same interface as regular shared pointers and regular weak pointer, and they also getting all of the goodies that atomic types have. So you can play with them and try to implement log-free containers if you feel adventurous.
Thank you. All right, and now Gabby's going to tell us a little bit about the Parallelism TS.
Okay, so what's new? So what is new? The Parallel TS focuses only mostly on task. So you get execution policy from time object that allows you to select whether you want a sequential execution or parallel execution or vectorization of some of the standard algorithms. So you have global object, seek, par to par for parallelism, and parvec for vectorization. So if you take existing C++14 code, here you acquire some data into vector. And then if you just say sort, begin, and end of the vector, you get the usual sequential whatever implemented today. But with the parallel TS, you'll be able to actually select whether you permit a parallel execution or if you actually want also vectorize execution. And you can actually change these kind of executions at runtime. So, if you get this big data and depending on the threshold, you can actually test, oh, is this data too much for me to to allow parallel execution? You can actually set that. Thanks. So if you look at the algorithms, the standard algorithms, some of them are just control flow, like for each. And some of them are more, algebraic in nature. So, we have the reduction, standard reduction algorithm, accumulate is the reduction algorithm, and you have partial sum, which basically is a kind of scan. For the partial sum, you have two forms. You have the inclusive and exclusive. So the inclusive essentially says, well, you only do any partial sum at the if iteration don't include the if number in there. For this to work properly, you need the operation to have some mathematical property to make sense. So for example, if you have plus, which is essentially associative and commutative, you just want to say, well, I have here data x1 to xn, and it doesn't matter in which order they are added, and that gives great flexibility to the system. If you have something like string concatenation, that one is not commutative, right? Foo bar is not the same as bar foo. So this is a case where you say, well, just partition the data in some form and apply your magic. Thanks. And in general, you have far more algorithms, and here you have a list that couldn't actually fit on the slides, but essentially you have the the more control flow oriented. So for each, we tend to make this joke in C++ 11 or even before that, it is an empty algorithm, except when you move to the parallel words, and it actually has something there to encapsulate how control flow is done. So that's very, very good. And then you have for each n, which is generalization of generates and copy n, and you have a bunch of other stuff there. I can't even read them from here. But if you want to know more, then you should just go to the isosbp.org and get the link and read more about them.
All right, thank you. Next up is Michael Wong telling us a little bit about the transactional memory TS.
Thank you. So you can read a little bit about the history of the group on the slides. The main thing to know is that the TS has been approved. Implementation has always been there in GCC 4.7, which implements an earlier model with slightly different syntax. The specification is a software-only specification. It doesn't demand hardware. Hardware, however, will accelerate it, but it also adds its own complexity, because if you have to hand off, well, that's another complication. So it does. It is there, and it works. So let's take a look at it. It can be all be seen. All the syntax can be seen in one slide. There are two constructs because we decided that first of all, starting with synchronize, it gives you a simple way of doing mutexes that's composable. Incidentally, if you're wondering what the big deal with transactional memory, it gives you composable locks, whereas locks don't compose, hence leading to deadlocks and things like that. Atomic no accept is if you really want the full flavor of atomic of transactions would roll back. So hence, as a result, if you roll back, you have to tell me whether you have no exceptions coming out, whether you have whether when a rollback happens, or sorry, when an exception happens and it escapes the atomic transaction, whether you want me to commit, that's the second one, or if you want me to roll back, truly cancel everything, and that's the third one. There are a few other attributes and things like that goes along with it. I'm not going to explain it too much. However, there is one little caveat. People have always complained that C and C++ don't follow align each other properly. So for the first time at this conference, this is the first time I'm revealing it, the next slide is going to show what I'm going to take to the C committee, the similar C syntax, where I'm going to show that we're going to essentially generate the same kind of syntax. But C has this wonky thing, so that's why you see the underscore. And I'm not going to talk too much about it, because I still cringe when I see this.
All right, thanks, Michael. All right, and now we get another Michael to tell us about the networking TS.
Okay, so in 2014, in June, the committee asked Chris Koloff to go back and to take a look at the paper that he presented that was based upon Boost Osseo work and, ASIO, I'm going to say right for Chris here, ASIO work, and to take that and to add in C++ 14 constructs to that. And he did that. What it addresses are the things that you see on the right-hand side of the slide, TCP, UDP, clients and server side both, the concentrating on scalability, the connections, the protocol is going to be independent of IPv4 6, 4 and 6, and then name resolution, and then of course you need timers. If you want a look at what that looks like from a standard point of view, if you go to his site, which is thethinkasync.com, you'll actually see a standalone version that doesn't require Boost, and that's very closely representative of what should be in the be submitted for the final TS. So it implements, we have sockets and acceptors, we have things in both synchronous and it deals with asynchronous. It deals with the different timer types that you expect. If you've dealt with the asynchronous IO library out of Boost, one of the things you might be thinking is, well, what's the difference between a 14 change and previous? An example would be the accept call no longer takes a non-const ref socket. Instead, it generates a socket internally, and it returns that object by moving it out. So that would be a typical change. One of the prerequisites for networking is we need asynchronous models, and we need executors. And so the asynchronous models that are set up to work with, we saw one that would be common maybe if you've written asynchronous IO code before, with callbacks. It also has support for futures. The future support is not necessarily bound to STD future, but anybody's implementation of a future. And then of course coroutines, which are very exciting, and reasonable functions in general. And Chris's implementations are non-stack based, and you can get that there. I'm sorry, did I send you on? I didn't mean to do that.
Oh.
And then an executor. Executors are to function execution in the same way that a memory allocator is to memory allocation. So it tells when and what and how. And if you've used this stuff before, then you would be you'd be used to seeing a strand, which you know will take and bound how an execution is going to occur and when it's going to occur and when it can't occur. So that's what an executor basically is.
Thank you very much. Now Beeman is going to tell us a little bit about the file system TS.
File system TS, I think, was the first of the TSs that actually shipped. We finished it in 2014. I think I escaped from ISO's bureaucracy finally in January of this year. If you want to see a reference to it, the final committee document was in 4000, easy to remember. If you just Google C++ file system TS is probably about all you need to do. What is it? It's a library that allows you in a portable way to do things like, say, iterate over the contents of a directory or a directory tree. Just as one example of the sort of thing it can do, it's other than the operational functions that do things to your external file system or query it, It has a class path that encapsulates the notion of paths, which I think everyone is familiar with. And just go ahead and look at it. That's about all you need to know about what it is. It comes from the Boost File System library. It's a very mature library. It's been shipping for 12 or 13 years in version 1, version 2. This is essentially Boost ships version 3 now. I'll call the TS version 4 almost identical. Committee cleaned up a few things, inserted some stuff that makes use of C++ 11 and some more modern C++ constructions. Status, so it's shipped, and it's done. It's an ISO TS, and so there's a future too. This isn't the end of the line. This is the beginning of the line. And there are three things that are probably in the future. And I say probably because two of them we don't have proposals yet. But the first is that the intent right from the beginning was to issue a TS, gain some experience, and then put this in the standard. Because many people on the committee have felt all along that the actual standard itself, standard library, needs to have a file system component. So we ship the TS. Boost, of course, has been shipping it for years. Microsoft shipped version 2 and now is shipping version 3. I think the other major library vendors either are starting to ship or will soon start to ship. So we're getting field experience. We've also had the tremendously valuable experience you get when a different person implements a library. And if you look at the dates on issues that have been filed, defect reports that have been filed, you can see when Jonathan Wakely did their implementation and so forth and so on. So that's in the future. C++, whatever, could make 17. Maybe it'll be the next one after that, but it's in the future. Then the two other, so this is essentially file system 1. File system 2, the couple of things we have people interested in providing proposals for are high secure, I'll just describe them as high security functionality that the everyday file systems that we've used for years, and that's very much what the file system TS is based on, the APIs and the traditional POSIX and Windows APIs have some unfortunate characteristics as far as very high security apps go. We hope we will get some proposals, one or more proposals, for the standard library that add additional high security file system features. The other thing is that this is just a on your device kind of a file system. In larger problems, you can't just run a file system library that runs on one machine. It's got to be distributed across many, many machines, often at widely differing geographic locations. So the distributed file systems, I think I'm turning, looking at Michael Wong because IBM is one
They're of
the They're
called GFS, yeah. Global File Systems.
Global File Systems that... you know, that I hope in the future. I won't do that work. I know nothing about those file systems. I don't even know their correct name. But there are people in this world that do, so that's in the future. And that's about it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. All right, and last but not least, Eric's gonna tell us some things about the Concepts TS.
Okay, great. First I wanna say that this slide kind of makes it look like I'm responsible for the concepts TS, and I'll say that I am not, actually. Andrew Sutton is responsible for the concepts TS. I'm here as a proxy, I suppose, because Andrew can't be here. What can I say about concepts in 2 minutes? It has a long history. Since I only have 2 minutes, I can't go too far into the history of the concepts TS, except to say that it's a feature that has been a long time coming. It got put into C++11, it got ripped out of C++11, it is back now from the dead in a newer and greatly slimmed down form. It is basically a very minimal subset of concepts functionality in order to conceptify the standard library. Now, if you don't know what concepts are, none of that made any sense to you at all. So what I will say about concepts, the language feature, is that it is basically a type system for template arguments. The problem that it aims to solve is, first and foremost, very bad error messages that you get from the standard template library when you're passing invalid arguments, things that don't have the correct capabilities that the algorithm you're passing it to needs. So for instance, if you have ever been misfortunate enough to pass a bidirectional iterator to std sort, you have learned the hard way that that will not compile, but the compiler error message that you got might have been somewhat opaque and somewhat verbose. Hopefully, once we have compilers that implement the concepts language feature, you'll get a very nice error message out that says, hey, you passed me something that does not model the random access iterator concept. I don't know what to do with this. So the state of the concepts TS is that it is done, I think. Yes, it's done. Great. And compiler vendors are now busy implementing it. If you pull GCC from trunk and build and compile with the dash std equals C++1z flag, you have a concepts implementation. It even kind of works, sort of. Which is terrific. I'm told that the Clang guys, that there's an effort up and running to implement the concepts feature, possibly on a branch. Is that right?
We're working on it.
Yeah.
Working on it. Great. And I'm told that this is something that's really important to Microsoft, too. I don't know if that effort has gotten off the ground yet, but it's definitely on their radar, and it seems very important. Nobody is waiting for it to go into the international standard proper. TS is good enough, so people are busy implementing this. It's important. When it will land in the international standard proper is anybody's guess at this moment. It's probably something that will be a topic of great interest at the upcoming CONA meeting in October of the committee. There are definitely some on the committee who would like to see this in C++17. There would be good reasons to put it in. There would also be good reasons to defer it until it is baked a little longer and until there is a standard library that uses the language feature. So I'm kind of the person who's most in the way of that. I'm working as fast as I can, but yeah, at this point it's mostly just me. So I'm kind of holding up the works. You can blame me. So that's the state of concepts in a nutshell. And I think that's all I got.
All right, thank you. All right, so we're going to get a couple of microphones down to the stands, and so if you guys want to queue up with questions, so you can ask the questions on the mic. Come on, we need some questions. Just start forming the queue. All right.
It was on. Test.
Yeah, there we go.
Hi. Is there any update with respect to the ABI standard?
Who wants to handle that? I'm the moderator.
So the question was, is there any update to the ABI standard? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. The easy answer, the cop-out answer, is that the C++ standard does not mention ABI pretty much anywhere. And so if there's no mention to it, there's no update to it, it doesn't exist.
So...
Let me finish. That being said, there's a separate standard that many of the... that several of the vendors actually look to, the Itanium ABI standard, and people are loath to change that without a really good reason because, well, ABI breaks tend to break software. But it is getting updated slowly as people point out inconsistencies in it. People are not trying to make sweeping changes to it, at least in my, at least I'm not seeing any. What people are doing is fixing problems and adding things.
Yeah, this is a very serious problem for C++, especially for people who are developing APIs that they want to be at the OS level or at least to be stable. Herb Sutter has a paper out for discussion. We haven't been able to look at it more because we've been busy with equally pressing other stuff. I do hope that at some point we'll get back to that because, you know, as you see, we're going to get new stuff into the standard, and we'll have to have the discussion again about ABI stability and so forth.
Thank you.
I was looking at the example for the networking TS, and I noticed that they were passing in this TCP thing, and I do some network programming and SOC, and then passing in all those sys flags and stuff because I work on Linux. It's painful. So I guess my question is that a generic kind of placeholder? Can you say Ethernet and then start building raw protocols on top of that? Or is right now you get TCP and UDP and be happy that you got that?
So the TS at this time only covers TCP and UDP. Okay. If you want to take a look at the Boost implementation and the either one, you can actually look at the different service implementations. You can implement your own service to go to the IO service. And we do that internally with all kinds of protocols. So it's very flexible for adding whatever you need. But the TS only covers TCP and UDP.
What about modules?
The question was, what about modules? That's a grenade. Well, at this point, there is no plan for ETS. We're still working on the specifications. No, in my view, put something solid for the community to judge, and then we will have our standard procedure to decide whether we're happy with it enough to put it into the standard, or whether we would like to wait for another 5 years. My hope is that we will work very hard and do our best to put something there to the community in the coming months, and then have a serious discussion about it. My personal preference is that we can get it into 17, but I know there are very opinions on the matter. So it's an open discussion.
All right, I see them, some empty chairs. So what happened to arrays or DIN arrays?
I'm sorry, what happened to erase?
Dynamic arrays.
Dyn array, sorry. it's a kind of a sad story. Dyn array was originally added to the draft standard for C++ 14, and then it was removed. And then it was put into the arrays technical specification working paper. And then the array specification group kind of went moribund. And so really it's not really anywhere at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Marshall just said. If you look at the core, C++ core guidelines, there is a mention of stack array. You know, the fact that we were unable to get something into standard doesn't mean that the problem doesn't exist or just disappeared. We do hope that at some point in the future, near future, we'll get something much simpler than what was there because the needs is still there. I'm one of those guys who are still very optimistic about getting stuff for people to use widely.
I just wanted to add that that one of the design goals for the Dynarray was that people were not really interested in it if it didn't live on the stack as a local variable. And so there are some interesting problems with, you know, writing safe code with that, was felt that there would require some compiler work to ensure that. And so that was one of the reasons that it did not actually stay in the C++ 14 draft standard. The idea is that, you know, if you can prove that it's always a local variable and no references and so on escape, then you can put it on the stack. Otherwise, it has to go on the heap, and then people are suddenly much less interested in Dynarray if it has to go on the heap because, well, vector.
All right. So the TSs are there for getting feedback from the community, right? So now I found a defect in the concepts TS, as it so happens. What is the best way to deal with that? I mean, I discussed that on the concepts mailing list, but that doesn't mean that it's getting feedback into the process, right?
Any of the TSs can still have errors and fixes, and each editor is responsible for maintaining an error, a defect list, and then work on it at meetings. That might actually be processed and actually form the possible next TS. So the best thing to do is just contact the editor directly.
Okay.
Yeah, and the issues I know of that I've seen on the concept list are actually kept in Andrew's list. And so I'll make sure that we don't forget any of those.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, at the back of that book that they've been handing out about the, from John Calda, pieces back, they mention all of these TSs, and the networking TS is marked as inactive. Can you tell me where the networking TS is in terms of
the book is printed, therefore it's out of date.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was just curious because
yes.
I saw that and somebody was asking me, and I don't know.
We did a fairly thorough review of Chris's proposal this past February. And Chris was unable to attend the last meeting, which was in May, but I expect him to be at the next meeting, which is in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I believe you will see significant progress at that meeting, you know, from a point of view of ISO milestones. I mean, Chris has been working on it. It's not like, you know, he's been sitting on the beach in Australia, well, all the time. But no, I think from a committee point of view, in terms of, you know, milestone A, milestone B, milestone C, I think you'll see progress at the next meeting.
Great, thank you.
I would like to ask, what is the process left for getting this TS to the C++ 17? So I assume that those things are getting closer to get to the C++ 17, and what are the odds that they will not be in C++ 17?
I guess, well, I've had some experience getting TSs in because this is my second. You have to gather some amount of quorum and demonstrate justification and interest. Often the committee will come back and ask, for example, for transactional memory, they came back and asked usability and performance reasons, test cases, so we actually went back with that. With the games group, we actually gathered a substantial community and gathered common interests and then achieved a reasonable quorum. And as it turned out, it became fabulously huge because there actually were a lot of people there. At the end of the day, whether a TS fully makes it into a standard, which is the second part of your question, there's no guarantee. We always say it could go in there in its entirety or in parts or none of it. What happens is people will implement it, there's going to be user feedback, experience, and then from there we will redraft it based on that feedback, and then that's the incorporation step. You just, you know, some or all or none of it could be in there.
I just wanted to echo something that Michael said. Feedback from quote unquote the field is really good. You know, if you have the ability to And when I say ability, I don't mean you're smart enough or anything like that, but if you have time and willingness to use, you know, the implementations of the TS that are out there, or willing to write one of your own and try it, you can file issues against the TS. You can talk to members of the committee about what works and what doesn't and what changes you think would make it better, or send them to the project editor. That's great, because this is the point of the TS, is to gain further experience with it. And while the committee contains some fairly smart people, they're not the be-all and end-all of C++ dumb. And one other thing, Michael, is that
I don't believe you, Marshall.
Past, I always thought we just threw all the project editors into a room and locked the door, and the one that came out got his TS accepted.
Are you referring to the Vatican or the...
Yeah, waiting for some white smoke.
All right, let's get more questions.
Let me just add one little thing to that, that the each TS working paper has the name of the editor on it. That there's an email address, and so you can always find out who it is that you, if you have a question about how does this TS want defect reports, there's always a person and an email address attached to it, and so you can find out just on the internet.
I just want to remind people actually to come up and ask more questions. We're down to like only one person in each queue, so if you want questions, you need to get on up here. Go ahead.
Are there any plans for Unicode TS? Are there plans for Unicode?
The question is, are there any plans for Unicode TS? Not at this moment.
Would you like to write one?
Indeed, that's where it's at, is that it's not that there's, you know, not that nobody thinks it's important, it's that nobody has stepped up and said, yes, I really want one and I'd like to work on it. The committee works off of volunteers, people who say, I want to solve this problem.
I'm working on an extremely limited proposal to ensure string interoperability. And that is one of the first steps to improving usability of the Unicode encodings. But it's just a tiny little step. I'm certainly not planning to do an entire Unicode-based proposal.
I'm really excited by all of these features that, you know, out of the box we're going to get a lot of functionality. But the one thing I think is missing is testing. You know, we're trying to instill a culture of testing, and yet when I open my compiler box, I get no help at all. And if I want to have an open source project and I want to have unit tests, it's really hard to make that portable as well. So is this an obvious thing that people are just overlooking, or is it not fun? Or
so I'll step out of my moderator role briefly. So I just wanted to mention that the Reflection Study Group actually has a couple of people in it working on building up primitives that they need in order to propose a testing library. So there's not no progress. But I'll put my moderator hat back on now.
You mentioned in passing during the file system TS that version 2 would involve like high security features, and I was wondering, does that mean encryption, or does that mean like time of check to time of use, or does that mean something else?
We don't know, because we don't have a proposal yet, and nothing, the way the committee operates, you can talk and you can wish and you can do anything, but until a written proposal lands, nothing will actually happen. Cool. The committee works by taking in written proposals. And there's a whole, if you go to ISO-CPP, there's, you know, and look in their section on standardization, there's things about how to make proposals and so forth and so on, and where to send them. But we have had promises from people that they would like to submit a proposal, but they're people who are very, very overloaded. Because I know I'm not going to name them, because
that they're doing so much useful work already that I don't want to be negative in any way. I want to be positive. But we could sure use, there are no proposals on the table for file system right now, except one minor one that's going to hit in this meeting. So if you've got any ideas.
Well, I mean, the word security was mentioned, or I think it was that.
That's one of the ones that
I'm curious about what that means.
That is one that we've already made a commitment that we'll give that a very high priority when we look at it, because we don't have anything else to look at now that we've finished the regular TS, other than a few defects. But that's one we'd like. But until we actually get something in the written form, nothing will really happen.
So someone like mentioned the word security, but nobody knows like what, like whether they object to make temp or whether they want to see like the ability to encrypt your home directory or whether they want to see like, I don't know.
The original discussion about this centered around things like time of check, time of use, and race conditions. But I suspect it will not stop there.
Okay.
So I have a more specific question about stuff in the TSs getting into 17 and people wishing for things, but the committee operating on proposals. And it's mostly directed toward Marshall. Are you and the Library Evolution Chair, Jeffrey Yaskin, going to shepherd the fundamentals TS, V1, and eventually V2 into 17? Or are you expecting the authors of the individual proposals to write proposals saying, hey, you know, you got this thing in the fundamentals, and now it's time to move it into 17, because some of those authors don't physically attend meetings. I was wondering what's going on there, and you guys are desperate for questions.
Jeffrey and I have not discussed that yet, but my impression was that once the TS was accepted as a group, that it was the responsibility of the chairs to shepherd its way in. If I'm wrong, I will certainly be contacting all the authors to let them know.
Thanks. I love that responsibility of the chairs part.
First, I will say thank you all for the great work which you are doing. Will you add any image processing support to the TS image processing to the main standard?
There is no proposal right now. If you are interested and want to propose, they will be happy to consider.
Okay, so there is proper way for that proposal? Or?
Yeah, the way the committee works, as was explained earlier, is people making suggestions, concrete suggestions, that the committee can act on. The committee doesn't have the resource or the means to just take wishes and turn them into executable specifications. There have to be incoming real proposal that we look at and try to improve and see the feasibility.
Oh, okay.
You have to gather a quorum, a critical mass, if you don't think you can do it by yourself.
Yeah, like now, like we are using OpenCV, but even if you want to only open image or do some basic processing, So I'd like if it's like stream-like processing, it will be very nice.
Yeah, definitely it is useful. It is just that, yeah, you have a lot of folks here, but like Bimam said, most of us, if not all of us, are overloaded in some form. And there is so much that can go out. The output is limited.
Okay. The members of the committee are, in many cases, experts on C++, but not really experts on image processing. Now, we would love to see a proposal on image processing, you know, from a domain expert saying, And we can give advice on maybe this is the best way to do it in C++, but the best way to do image processing? Don't you just, you know, pick the bits up off the floor and arrange them on a canvas or something?
Okay. Thank you.
So a couple of the new parallel algorithms have requirements like associativity, commutativity of the binary operator on the arguments. How is that going to be enforced, and can concepts do anything there? I don't immediately see how that's possible in the type system currently.
Yeah, so yes, the requirements are responsibility, not on the user. And right now, if you get it wrong, the behavior is undefined. That's specified clearly in the parallel TS. Can concept help there to some degree? We have been there before. We have some ideas about how to get it done. But one driving design guide, you know, principle I've had is keep it simple, right? We know how to get it mathematically and how to turn that into user interface, you know, simple user interface for the programmers is a little harder. But we will try our best to see what we can get. But the end, you still need input from the user because they know what the operations are doing. You know, concept do not have any AI that's built in to divine that your operation is associative or commutative. Right. You still have some responsibility.
Okay. Something like associativity is probably not surfaced in the type system. The concepts can't really, it has nothing to grab onto. So you might say like, well, std sort requires a function object that imposes a strict weak order on its arguments. What checking can be done on that? And the answer is none whatsoever. If you violate that, the std sort will crash. Yeah. So I don't think concepts has much to say or offer to help with this.
So how should we as programmers approach the question of whether a TS is stable enough to use in our code?
I wish I had a better answer than try it and see and use your judgment. Because as, okay, committee writes documents, implementers provide implementations. We're gathering feedback from in a TS. So the things in the TS may change over time if we find that we have made mistakes. And because it's a TS and not an international standard, we're less concerned about backwards compatibility. We named the namespace experimental for a reason. If you are, say, building a game console and you're going to burn something into ROM and you're going to deploy something that you're going to have to support for the next 10 years, this is probably not a good idea that you expect not to change for 10 years. Probably not a good idea. If you're in the kind of situation where you can turn a new version of your software every week, you know, the risk and reward trade-offs become a lot easier. You know, the risks become a lot lower. And the other thing is that it, you know, a lot of time it's new code, and I'd like to think that we have done a good job of providing implementations that don't have bugs, but there are going to be some bugs. So it's a trade-off. I mean, if you're doing something, you know, trading, you know, financial trading software, millions of dollars are riding on it every minute, probably not the best choice. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer than that.
But actually, thanks, Jeffrey, for bringing that up. I think everyone wants to know that. If you don't know what a TS is, just to it might be worth recapping. TSs have now become essentially mini evolution packets for us. We decided early on that with these major big long pole items, it would be very difficult to do them purely through evolution group. They still have to pass through evolution, but having these small groups working on them of the domain experts, it really helps to drive a multiple long pole items through, and that enables many more great new features to go into the next C++ standard. Having said that, those TSs are the culmination of the work of many domain experts within the group. I know that. I've worked with them. They really know what they're talking about. Whether something ends up being in the standard, on the one hand, I would say if you can stay in touch with the pulse of the committee, that really does help. I have a good feeling which part of my TS will probably make it into the next standard and which part might not. Unless you ask me, I probably won't say it.
All right, so we have just a little bit of time left, and so we're going to try and get the next four questions, but I'm going to ask my panelists to be as brief and direct as possible. If we have to, we'll go to five words, but that always gets a little bit... You guys want to do five-word answers? Five words. You get 5 words to try and answer the question.
If I can do that.
All right.
Five words, huh? Okay.
You can take more words.
Oh, sure. You can have more. This is going to be... Okay. So my understanding, and this is possibly massively out of date since it's been a while since I last checked, was that string view as currently specified does not conform to the concept of a range in Eric's proposal because of the comparison semantics, which do a character-by-character comparison, whereas ranges, two ranges are only equal if they refer to the same elements. Is that still true, and is there anything being done to address that?
I can't do that. No. We have more time. Go. Just go back to normal.
So that would be a valid range, but let me make sure I get this right. There is nothing in the range concept that says anything about equality. And let me take a moment to think about this. Okay. So a view is a kind of a range, but it must be a regular type. Regular types do, by necessity, have to have equality operators. And two things should compare equal to each other if they are representations of the same value, not necessarily if they're the same object. So it's equivalence, not identity, right? If two string views compare equal to each other because they have the same character sequence, then I think that meets the definition of these two things have the same value. So I'm not exactly sure what the problem is.
Okay, so if I call dot data on each of those string views, I will get back different answers.
If you call?
Dot data. To get the pointer to the to the underlying sequences.
Yes.
Yes, and I don't think that's a problem.
Okay. So fair enough.
Make a distinction between representational equality and equality of values.
Well, it's just that ranges, I see them very much as like pointers, and two pointers that point to the same, to different elements holding the same value are not do not compare equal.
Yeah, that's right. A valid point.
Yeah. All right.
The other problem, the only potential problem could be with the algorithmic complexity of these two operations, that I would expect the algorithmic complexity of the equality operator for a view
to be
proportional to the size of the view, which, you know, if a view is just holding two pointers, it should be order one.
Right.
If it is an order n operation, then that's not really meeting the algorithmic complexity requirements.
That's one of my concerns with it.
Yeah. So that is a concern.
Okay.
So I think Bjarne said on Monday that dialects are bad in the core language, but dialecting the libraries as we add more things that have requirements on specific operating environments seems unavoidable. Like if you're on an embedded device, you're not going to have network, you're not going to have file system. Or even if you're just, you know, in kernel space or whatever. As more things are added that require specific parts of environments to implement, are there any plans to add guidelines for implementers around sort of when they should be expected to implement these things?
Let me take that. The standard library since the earliest days, in fact, I believe this goes back to the C standard library also, does divide the world into hosted and non-hosted environments. And that clearly things like networking and file system are only required in hosted environments. And so we do provide guidance to implementers. And at the time of, I believe it was C+, I can't be sure of this, but whether it was 11 or 14, there was an issue out of the British Standards Institute that they thought we had got it wrong on, you know, something. And I believe we, if my memory is correct, we went back and agreed with them in the end and fixed it. So to that, that's a pretty, you know, a very coarse granularity. But and the time may come when we have to have a finer granularity than that, but that coarse granularity has actually been working okay for us for quite a long, long time now.
A year ago, I saw a proposal of named arguments in a function call. So is there anything going on with this thing?
I have not seen any activity on that proposal in the last couple of meetings. So I suspect when someone revives it and brings new data, we'll look at it.
So I have a question. Part of the work that you do is in study groups, and I think there are many domain experts here, which, for example, one previous person here was working on image processing, I'm working in audio, and there are many other domains where we all use C++, and I think there's much there going on where we could also add stuff to the C++ language or enrich the C++ library from domains that are not necessarily represented by domain experts in the committee right now. So my question is whether you would be in principle open to add new study groups for those domains that would be useful for the C++ language.
Yeah, sure. Part of the reasons why we have these study groups is to bring domain experts come and explain their problems and how they would like things to be to get solved. That's why we got these study groups to bring the domain expert to the committee.
That study groups was an initiative primarily of Herb's, and it was incredibly successful. And part of the rationale, the motivation, was to attract domain experts who were not attending committee meetings. It has been incredibly successful at that. And so study groups, we're really in a state now where study groups are continuously completing their work or saying, no, we can't reach a consensus and going out of business. At the same time, particularly, there are new ones coming into existence on a pretty regular basis in the standardization section of isocpp.org is the place to find out what the current study groups are. But if you're interested, propose something. That's the whole point of study groups. They're lightweight. They can be spun up easily. It's not a huge deal. It can be pretty easy. Herb can do it without much trouble.
So whom would I contact for something like this?
Yeah, and I would add that SG14 is a great example of that, bringing game developers and people specialized in low latency and trading and so on. So Mike will be able to give you more advice about how to get this done.
Thank you.
Well, I set my timer too early. We actually still have another 15 minutes or so. It's my bad. I already apologize. Did I get 10 words? But we need more questions. So any more questions? There we go. We got one more. Okay.
Sure. I use Qt a lot, so I use the mock system. I also do a lot of serialization, so both of those make me think about reflection. I Googled a little bit. I had a hard time telling what the status is of reflection right now.
You're making me take off my moderator hat.
Yeah, I know.
The status of reflection, we had a couple of very small kind of excellent papers that are already through the study group and are in the pipeline and will probably end up directly in a future library fundamentals TS. They are sufficiently kind of separable from reflection while being fairly essential to it, that we felt it was better to kind of spin them off and get them into the library stream early. Those are progressing quite nicely. There are more fundamental kind of reflection papers. There's been one which has gone through a few iterations, and there is a relatively paper that has been around but hasn't really been looked at seriously because it did not have a champion in the committee. Has recently gained a champion in the committee. These are two very different approaches, though. One of them is a 100-page plus paper, which is essentially a complete cohesive reflection system. It is also a very comprehensive reflection system and opens up a lot of very, very hard questions. The alternative we have is a very minimal reflection approach that kind of takes an incremental and very safe and uncontroversial small steps, but is not necessarily a complete approach. And right now, there are very intense discussions in the study group at every committee meeting trying to decide which of these approaches is the correct approach for the standard. I'm not aware of any imminent collapse of this state space. There's still really a lack of understanding of the alternatives. And so until we understand the alternatives better, it's hard to make a clear direction forward.
Thank you.
How to join the committee and go to Hawaii?
I'm sorry, all I heard was go to Hawaii.
How to join the committee?
How to join the committee. Anyone want to join this? I'm almost a newbie here.
Well, the simplest is join the ISSBP forums. If you want to go to the committee meetings are open to anybody. If you want to have active vote, like vote at the US level or national body level, then you have to get sent by your national body organization and you get registered somewhere on the ISO directory and you're listed as that national body's C++ expert. And then you get not just to participate in the work and give advice and feedback, but also to participate in the formal straw poll. Is that what we call them now?
The voting in the plenary
session. Yeah, there is a vote in voting in plenary session. You get to vote. So if you want to influence at that level, then you need to get sent by your national body. But the committee is really open to folks to come and participate.
As a practical matter, what almost always happens is that someone who's interested just simply attends a committee meeting. I think it's considered to be polite to let Herb Sutter as the convener know that you're there with an email. But I mean, the point is that a lot of people just show up. Don't even observe that nicely. They just show up. If you show up, you can vote in straw polls. It's quite a few years ago now, like 10 years ago, but in Santa Cruz, California, at a meeting, a waiter who was in the room to refresh the coffee voted. I was standing there. I was sitting where I could see him. And I see the guy. He does the coffee. And there's this intense argument going on about templates. And he's standing there nodding his head or shaking his head like he understands what. And so then Steve Klamage, who's chair, calls for a vote. And Steve just go, he's always doing this looking at raised hands. He's not looking at whose hands they are. The guy votes. Steve counts him. Nobody said boo. So, you know, there are some, and I understand, I believe they're cutting down on the number dramatically. There have never been very many. There are occasionally polls where they'll say they want the voting representatives only to vote. Mostly those are administrative polls. The technical polls normally are straw polls, anybody that's there that's voting. So you come to a meeting, you either enjoy it or you're totally bored stiff. Then you can learn how to do the, do the administrative mechanisms so that you're official. But you don't really need to worry about that very much until you find out if you really are interested. It's expensive. Because you're paying your own travel, unless you've got somebody to fund your travel fare. It's hotel and travel's not cheap.
So I would suggest everybody come to the meeting next June, which is in the north of Finland, because Finland, summer, it's never going to get dark, right?
I would just want to add that I have never paid dues, and I've never made myself an official member of the committee whatsoever. I've never been an official voting member, but I attend meetings as I can and as my budget allows, and participate in small straw polls, and I've found that to be extremely rewarding. So I encourage you to do it.
excuse me, this is just probably an administration question, but quite a lot I'll be Googling around and I'll come across a paper. I'm not aware of any particular mechanism for seeing what the state of a paper is. If I'm given a number, is there somewhere I can go and say, this paper was discussed here, and it was rejected or it was sent away or something like that?
Ask. Right. So you come. So lately, it's gotten a little bit better on the. I think on the paper list on the web page. Now it actually says if a paper has actually been accepted or retracted. I think I'm not sure it even says retracted. But yeah, for a general paper, it is difficult to figure that out. The best answer is ask a committee member who can trace the lineage through the minutes. Which might not be the best, the most satisfactory answer.
Well, it's a satisfactory answer, but it strikes me as, I don't know, a bit heavy for you guys. I mean, if all of us here today
and
came it, up a
and even a then, paper. we might not even be able to fit. When I started the games group, I had to really trace what that EAS, if the EASTO paper was actually reviewed or not. The record showed no review. I ended up asking the chairs, the two LWG chairs at the time, and they said in their recollection there was no review, and that was essentially my final arbiter at that time.
Remember, the committee is an all-volunteer organization. It has no money whatsoever. Everything is a donation. So if nobody volunteers, and one of the things that it's hardest to get volunteers for is to do the administrative work. Alastair Meredith kept a nice tracking, particularly I think both library and evolution issues for a long time, and then he got voted in to be library working group chair, and he didn't. It's quite time consuming with 100 or more papers in flight at every meeting, and nowadays. So if you wanted to join the committee just to have fun and be a spectator, but wanted to do something useful, that's something. I mean, you'd be embraced with open arms if you would just do nothing but track what's going on. There is the committee is a lot more open than it might be. Otherwise, because there are a lot of people that push for openness, we do have a private wiki that has a little bit more information. It's kept private because it has minutes of discussions that are very free-flowing and taken by volunteers, and those minutes are wrong. I mean, they misquote people all the time because an argument... You know, you get in a heated discussion and things are going back and forth, and then you read the minutes later and whoever took the minutes got a name confused and started attaching the wrong person's name to an argument. And there's no mechanism to correct that. It's just a wiki. And the committee doesn't want those mistakes to go out in front of the public. That's why they keep that wiki private. But we could use volunteers. The committee needs help. It's grown bigger. The number of papers in flight at any given moment is really big compared to what it used to be.
I will give it consideration. Thank you.
Hi. This is perhaps leads from that a little. And I discussed this a little bit with Marshall yesterday and started this. I realized that, you know, for better or worse, that most proposals seem to come from a fairly small group of people, and that a lot of the cases it's you guys who have very small bandwidth for time in general, just because you're people, but otherwise because you're very busy, that perhaps there would be a extreme benefit for you guys to potentially publish a to-do list containing a handful of things somebody could do in a reasonable amount of time that we could do to help unburden you guys. Like, you know, Marshall spends a lot of time doing the boost work, which I'm sure he enjoys, but at the same time, it feels like those are things that potentially others could help him out for if I had a list of, you know, things that would take me a weekend to do.
The evolution working group actually maintains a lot of a list of suggestions, and when people come with papers, then link suggestions to the papers, and so that's something I know it's done. I don't know the status, but library.
We had a list like that. Alistair maintained a list like that, and I do not know what the current status of it is. I will look into it and see if I can find where that's hosted.
All right.
Yeah, so when you look at the mailing, when it published, usually you'll see Evolution Work and Laser, something like that, and it's a document that maintains suggestions.
So yeah, some of them are reasonably small, and some of them are things like, we need a plan for Unicode strings.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking initially just coming from the coding perspective, right? Like Eric Niebler had to do a whole bunch of work for his ranges, and I'm sure there were a handful of times he jotted something down in an airport that if he'd been able to put that on a list, or if Marshall needed help on string view, that if it was something that you could write that down and put it on a website or email list or something, that I could help so that you guys could spend time doing the more important things, I guess, I'll call them.
So I have my own private list. If you want to find the Range V3 repo on GitHub, take a look at the issues list, find an issue that interests you, clone the repo, fix the bug, and submit a pull request, and I would be eternally grateful.
Oh, great.
There's also an STL2 repo on my GitHub, which is the LaTeX source of the Ranges TS. And if there is some issue in the Ranges TS that you would like to fix, I actually maintain a bugs list there for STL2. Something you'd like to see fixed in the STL2, go up by all means, open an issue, or submit a pull request, even better.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
I heard a rumor that there was a database study group.
Yes, there was a database study group. And unfortunately, the chair couldn't keep it going. And so if you know of anybody who is interested in taking the torch, then we'll welcome you open now.
Right, but is there something incomplete that's from them that's around that people can pick up the work from? Is there some kind of incomplete proposals from them that people could actually pick the work from? Is there any trace of their activity?
We'll take a look, but none of us can recall there was a partial proposal or anything like that.
Somebody who wanted such a thing but didn't have the years of domain expertise that would be required to do such a thing.
So this is a good case of something that why you need sustained interest, quorum, and enough people to keep it going. Sure, one, two people could do something, but more than likely, after a while it could get shut down, and so. A good one needs a fair bit of gene pool.
So while I was at the SG14 meeting, I found the whole notion of manually taking minutes to be quite ridiculous. Is there a reason why we don't use the audio-visual format as a technique for taking minutes as opposed to by hand?
So you're suggesting recording?
Aye.
I don't know if there's any legal. Yeah, Herb might. I like Herb to answer that because there might be an ISO thing.
I asked ISO. There are rules that do not do that.
Yep, that's kind of what I would guess too.
The reason is it inhibits open and free discussion, i.e., argumentation.
Right.
Yep. Michael, could you repeat that?
Yeah. So I kind of suspected that answer. That ISO forbids recording of such events because it could forbid open argumentation. These are Herb's words. People might be more inhibited in open in saying what saying their minds.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Otherwise, we will go ahead and wrap up and thank our panelists.